Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. Since election night 2016, the streets of the U.S. have rung with resistance. People all over the country have woken up with the conviction that they must do something to fight inequality in all its forms. But many are wondering what it is they can do. In this series, we'll be talking with experienced organizers, troublemakers, and thinkers who have been doing the hard work of fighting for a long time. They'll be sharing their insights on what works, what doesn't, what has changed, and what is still the same. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
Hi, this is Bruce Darling. I'm an organizer with ADAPT. We're a group of disabled folks who are from around the country who work to fight to have disabled people not forced into institutions, and we defend our freedom for those who are out in the community.
So ADAPT has done a couple of pretty dramatic direct actions around the Republican healthcare proposal. I understand you were part of the one that went on in Washington, D.C. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so basically there were a group of us, almost 60 of us, who made the trek to D.C. With the intent of letting Congress know exactly how bad this bill is and that disabled Americans are not going to just accept this. We thought that in part they were targeting Medicaid and the services and supports that we need because they think that we're not politically active, we're weak, and that they can basically get away with it. So we wanted to send a message that that was not the case. So we went to Mitch McConnell's office, and a group of folks went into the office. A bunch of us could not sit in, and at that point, folks got out of their wheelchairs. Everyone got on the ground who could, and we were basically dragged out by the Capitol Police.
Yeah, and those photos and video really got a lot of response. People were sort of saying, like, the police dragging people out of their wheelchairs is kind of a really impressive visual demonstration of what this healthcare bill would do.
Exactly. Well, that was, I mean, so for us, what this bill will do is disabled people, disabled Americans will die. Others will be forced into institutions, and it creates this terrible feedback loop because institutions are more expensive. With capped funds, that'll mean it'll draw more money into the institutions, making less money available for health care and services and supports in the community. So more folks will die and go into institutions. And we wanted people to see it's the equivalent of us basically being dragged off the way they saw it on the news. That's what happens. And actually, that's what happens even now with the Medicaid program as it is. This will just make it far, far, far worse.
Right, yeah, and we already, Medicaid, I was actually just working on a story on home health care workers and how this bill is going to affect them, because of course, Medicaid is the main way that home health care is funded, so that's a main thing that allows people to stay at home and not be put in an institution.
Right, well, and we wanted to highlight, using language that we thought or hoped the Republicans would understand, there isn't an asterisk on the Constitution that says, except disabled Americans.
Right.
So we should have a birthright of life and liberty, and Medicaid is the thing that actually pays for and supports our lives and our liberty in the community. So cutting that is actually cutting the lives and liberty of disabled Americans. It's killing disabled Americans, and we really wanted to drive that point home.
Yeah. Yeah, can you talk a little bit more about the specific services that Medicaid funds that would be decimated by this bill?
So people don't even think about it. So, like, the wheelchairs that people use to move around, the ventilators and feeding tubes that people use for breathing and eating, nutrition, the assistance, whether it's home health aides, personal care attendants, whatever the term is we use in our states, it's those people who come into our homes and help us in and out of bed, help us into the bathroom. They do our most personal care. They allow us to live. And then on top of that, well, you know, basically medications and medical care that we rely on. So basically what they do is they put us in a position where in capping those funds and cutting them by such, you know, nearly, what is it, $750 billion, basically they're eliminating all those things will be cut at the state level where they make these decisions. And we don't fare so well when that happens. Basically, we see now how people who go without assistance basically will get secondary conditions, and they will either end up in an institution or in some cases die. And we watch that happen now, and we just can't sit back and let that happen to any more of our people.
Yeah. Yeah, and talk a little bit about the history of ADAPT and the history of the independent living movement and the organizing and activism that made this funding and, you know, consideration happen in the first place.
So ADAPT actually began in the fight too, and I'm old enough to have been involved in that fight, to fight for lifts on buses. And it's really interesting when you talk to young people now, they think, wow, lifts on buses, duh, of course they have lifts. But back in the day, back in the 80s, this was a controversial topic. People, like, argued whether or not there should be lifts on buses and whether disabled people should have access to public transit and didn't we need a special separate system so that we weren't mixed in with the general population. So what we found is people were being denied access to the basic things they needed to live their lives, and they had to basically schedule their transportation well in advance. You know, and frankly, people were like, my aunt didn't plan to die 14 days ahead of time. I needed a way to get to her funeral. So that kind of basic thing was what we were working on back in the mid-80s. With that achieved as part of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which was tied to that historic crawl up the steps, ADAPT looked at what the next level issue was, and it was really community integration. And we've been fighting that fight now for 27 years. And you would think, honestly, you know, it seems like it should be a no-brainer. You know, should disabled people be allowed to live in the community? Well, yes, of course. But, you know, we have a lot of people who make money on the fact that we're locked up in institutions, and those people make contributions, and it's been a real tough road for us to get that issue through to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell us a little bit. So in addition to the action in D.C., there was a sit-in in Cory Gardner's office in Colorado. What are some other actions that ADAPT has been involved in leading up to this healthcare bill?
Okay, so, well, we were arrested in the Capitol Rotunda. So back earlier in the process, this has been named the Summer of ADAPT because we have been arrested so many times and in so many different places that our heads are spinning from keeping track of all of the court dates and the fines and the processing. And then earlier in the year, we were also at, we did a national action and highlighted these issues at the White House where we were arrested as well. So we've taken this message, you know, our message about community integration everywhere we can, basically to say these cuts to Medicaid will just basically reinforce the system that forces us into institutions and kills us. We even went to Ivanka Trump's house in the hope that a group of women, so it was a first for us, it was a women-run, women-only national action. So basically what we did was while we were being processed out of the White House, the women went first, they were processed out, and the cops said, oh, that's nice, they're being put in vans to be taken back to the hotel. What they didn't know was they were sending them off to Ivanka Trump's house to basically carry a message there.
Was Ivanka home?
Their son was, and that was really actually kind of cool because I got a bunch of text messages from folks saying, the son's waving at us. It was really cool, honestly, because everyone was like really excited, and just the response from everyone in the street was very sweet, and the energy of that group could only have been because a group of women got together and did this. We men, if we were in it, would have just mucked it all up. But they did a great job in terms of engaging the child, who was very excited to see them. But Ivanka was not willing to talk to them.
Oh, well. Well, that's disappointing.
It really is, because we thought this issue is really, the issue that we're fighting with is a woman's issue, really, when you think about it. Women are the informal caregivers, they're the formal caregivers, and by and large, they're the folks who end up in nursing facilities. So, you know, we're fighting for the rights of women to live free.
So, going forward, the Congress is on its July 4th recess while we're talking. What are the next steps? What actions do you have coming up that you can tell us about? Of course, I don't want to.
Okay, well, we're protesting everywhere. It is incredible to watch. So we've had protests from Fairbanks, Alaska to Orlando, Florida to Portland, Maine. And right now as we speak, there's a group of people protesting in Senator Flake's office in Phoenix. So they are preparing, it seems like at this point, they're preparing to go to arrest there. The message is they're not leaving until they get a no vote, which is what happened in Portland, Maine. I think one of the things people should know is when Senator Collins said or her staff said no is no. Basically, they hit a no vote. Folks actually celebrated that victory and left. Cory Gardner, on the other hand, wouldn't actually engage the disabled protesters, so they ended up staying days in his office and then ended up being arrested. So we're willing to put our bodies on the line because our lives and liberty are.
Have any other, other than Susan Collins, have any other senators engaged with you or had any sort of useful dialogue with you?
No. We have reached out. We have tried. You know, I think even the lack of dialogue, however, has been useful. I think what it's done is allowed us to highlight this issue for people. So the fact that we're being arrested is raising the consciousness of folks that this is an attack on Medicaid, that people think, you know, it's been lost in the rhetoric about Obamacare and all of that, which is in and of itself atrocious. But then no one had been talking about these attacks on Medicaid. And when word has gotten out to folks that, you know, this is cutting the basic supports disabled Americans need to live, that elderly Americans need, people are pretty appalled by that. And even some ardent Trump voters have said, that's not what I voted for.
Yeah.
So we're hopeful about the protests.
Great. How can people keep up with ADAPT and with you?
Okay, so follow us on Twitter. So we're at National ADAPT. We have a website, adapt.org, and the hashtag that we're using is ADAPT and Resist. So you can actually see up-to-the-minute information from folks about protests happening all over the country, and this is going to be a busy week for us, so it's a good time to follow.
All right. Do you have a personal Twitter that people can follow, too?
Yes, I'm Adapter Bruce.
So
that's how you can follow me.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Faillebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.